Welcome to What Matters in North Carolina. Glad to have you listening to the program today. We are chock full, so to speak. We've got Representative John Bell, the North Carolina House Majority Leader. Also, Susan Myrick. She is the Elections Policy Analyst with the Civitas Institute. And very well-known and getting more well-known by the day, it seems, Susan Swift, commentator and writer for Politichicks, which is a fast-growing website. We'll be talking about election integrity with Susan and then Susan, and we're going to kick things off with Representative Bell, find out how the recovery from Hurricane Matthew is going. A lot of his district has been affected by that, and how he feels Governor McCrory is managing the response. So thank you very much for listening as always, and please remind your friends and family that they can go to freedomactionnetwork.com. They can listen to the show. They can download the show. They can sign up and subscribe. They have the show downloaded to their phone every single day. You can find us in iTunes Store and the Google Play Store as well. So without any further ado, thank you so much for listening to What Matters in North Carolina. It's always a pleasure to welcome back to What Matters in North Carolina our good friend, John Bell. He is the House Majority Leader in the North Carolina House of Representatives. Representative Bell, welcome back.
Thank you for having me. It's always nice to take time to chat with you.
Well, as our listeners may or may not know, you represent Craven and Greene and Lenoir and Wayne counties, and there was a lot of aftermath of Hurricane Matthew there, the flooding and all of that. I'd like to get you to share with our listeners an update how things are progressing and trying to get life back to normal there in your district.
Well, we actually got hit twofold. When you looked at when Hurricane Matthew came into our area that Saturday afternoon, we experienced somewhere in between 15 to 18 inches of rain in about an hour and a half to 2 hour period, and so we had massive flash flooding. And that was the first phase of the hurricane issues that we had, where we had flash flooding. We had roads that got washed out. We just had complete and total destruction with our transportation system here. And then 2 days later, of course, that water has to flow into the Neuse River. And then the Neuse River started to rise. So not only did we have the flash flooding issues and the washout issues, now we experienced the flooding issues. And I believe Hurricane Floyd crested in the Goldsboro area around 28 feet, and Hurricane Matthew, the Neuse crested somewhere around 29 feet. So we were dealing with a completely different situation than what we dealt with in Hurricane Floyd. Also, of course, 2 days after the river crest in Goldsboro, Then it goes down to Kinston and Crest and Kinston, and so we experienced significant flooding in Lenoir County, of course, the washout situation there. And then, of course, that goes down into Craven County, and so it was about every 2 days we were dealing with a different issue. But I will say our first responders, our emergency personnel, our law enforcement, our community has rallied around each other, neighbors helping neighbors, and have done everything that they possibly could to take care of one another. And if you had to look at a bright spot in all this, that's the bright spot, that we had people that had their businesses flooded, their houses flooded, and it wasn't a waiting around. It was neighbors pitching in and help with the cleanup and recovery efforts that were going on. The big issue we had in Wayne County and Lenoir County is that if you look at the geography there and the way the Neuse River comes through, is that both counties were actually split in half. And when the river got to the crest, you could not get to the southern part of any county. So our emergency management officials actually prepared for that, and were prepared for that for that time where the counties were cut in half. And I can just not say enough about what our emergency personnel did, the leadership of the governor. Governor McCrory and I were in constant contact with each other. Every time that we ran into a little issue, it was a phone call and it was taken care of, and I could not ask for more help than what we had. Also, folks from all over the state were responding in. Folks from all over the country were coming in, and it was a wonderful outpouring of support. Now we were out of the response phase. Now we're into the recovery phase, and this is what's going to last a very long time. because you have people that lost everything. You have businesses that have lost everything. And the cleanup has begun, and it's well underway, but it's going to take a long time.
Our guest is Representative John Bell. He is the House Majority Leader in the North Carolina House of Representatives. And one thing I wanted to ask you, Representative Bell, was about what you just talked about, because I can remember, and I don't know if you'll remember this or not, but years ago when Charlie Gaddy was doing the weather at WRAL, you know, it didn't matter if it was going to snow a lot or rain. You just kind of felt confident with Charlie there behind the camera. And that same confidence I've been sensing from Governor McCrory that, you know, things are going to be all right. He is exuding leadership and confidence. And I think the people of North Carolina are really blessed right now to have a governor who is able to, you know, take charge and manage this aftermath of such a tremendous flooding situation. And I personally, when I see him on television and listen to him talk about this, I feel like everything's going to be all right.
Well, you know, and I want to touch on that briefly about what people see. You know, the governor has stood there in front of those TV cameras. He's been on the ground. He's communicated that hey, Eastern North Carolina, we're here for you. You've not been forgotten. You're not going to be forgotten, and we're going to see this thing through. That's what people all across the state and the country saw. What they didn't see is what happened behind the scenes when you get the phone call on Sunday afternoon, and it's the governor and says, hey, John, what do you need? Tell me what you need, and we'll make sure you get it. And I'll just give you an example of that. We were in a situation where we had power crews and emergency responders from all over the state coming into Wayne County. We could not get enough cots and bedding for these people to come in to have a place to sleep that night. And we were trying everything that we could. We reached out to the Boy Scouts. The Boy Scouts had cots and bedding materials and supplies, but we couldn't get to the Boy Scout camp because the roads were washed out or flooded. So I called the governor and told him about the problem we had. I said, Governor, is there by chance anything that we can, do we have any supplies at the old Cherry Hospital? If you remember, we moved into the new Cherry Hospital. Picked up the phone, called Secretary Brazier. Within 30 minutes, we had the confirmation to go to the old Cherry Hospital. We pulled over 200 bedding mattresses out, and every single first responder had a place to sleep that night. And and those are the things that don't make the news. And that you don't see, that don't get the glorious tagline, but that is what was going on. And our governor, another day, and our governor led the charge with that, and he was responsive to every single need that we had. When we had a concern about the Corps of Engineers dumping more water, releasing more water from the falls of this dam, and that affecting what was going on here in Goldsboro and in Kinston, the governor's office was there with us on the conference calls. Senator Tillis' office was with us on the conference calls. You could not have asked for a better team and better leadership during this. And, you know, I just want people to know that we had a leader. He's been here. He's put boots on the ground. He's seen what's going on. And he took the phone calls, whether it was first thing in the morning or late at night. When I said, Governor, we need some help, he was there for us. And everyone here in Eastern North Carolina knows that.
Well, I think that's fantastic. And Representative Bell, as you have been, you know, talking to folks and riding around in your district and surveying the damage and getting your own personal assessment, what are folks saying? Are they feeling that same kind of confidence as well, do you think?
They are. You know, it's the governor I know was in Princeville yesterday, which is, of course, outside Tarboro. He was there. He's been in all the communities that have been touched. When he's not actually in the community, I know he's flown over top. I was actually with Speaker Moore yesterday. We were in Tarboro and then in Princeville and then ended the night in Rocky Mount. They're an event for Representative Collins. You know, we have been on this from day one, and the response has been whatever our community needs, whatever our emergency management officials need, we're going to get done. But the big thing is that this community in every part of the county is affected, and even outside of the county is affected. Our communities and our state have rallied around the people that lost the most and to get us through this. So there's a sense of unity. There's a sense of community support, and there's just a sense of that our governor's been with us from day one.
Our guest is Representative John Bell, House Majority Leader in the North Carolina House. And I don't want to just continue to talk about the Hurricane Matthew, but I will, one final thought. I was speaking yesterday with Mayor B.J. Murphy, who I'm sure you know very well. He spoke highly.
I know him very well.
He spoke highly of the relationship that he, as a mayor there in Kinston, has with you guys in the General Assembly. And so I know that you're going to be working closely with Mayor Murphy and others in your district to help everybody get back on their feet again.
Yes. Mayor Murphy and in Kinston, Mayor Chuck Allen in Goldsboro. I've been on the phone with the commissioners in Craven County, been on the phone with school officials in all four counties. And then that was one of the issues, but obviously issues that we had to address yesterday, because we wanted to make sure that, that the people understood exactly where we were when the governor issued Executive Order 10 and looked at waiving the school days. That's a big deal for our students and teachers here in our counties. You have some schools that were not able, you couldn't get to. Students were out of school for 2 weeks, and this was a major concern, and I was glad that the governor took the lead. Speaker Moore and Representative Martin, Representative Dixon, Representative Murphy, and myself held a press conference yesterday in Pitt County to address that, and that the General Assembly is taking this serious, and we're going to move forward to get those days waived so this will not be a burden on these schools, because this was not their fault. It was a natural disaster.
Well, you beat me to the punch. I was going to ask you about that meeting yesterday, but it sounds like you did make some progress there, and just some common sense for the folks there, particularly in the Robeson County area, who are still have not come back to school.
And there are some situations. I know in Tarboro yesterday, and of course down in Robeson County, there are schools that were heavily damaged and are not going to be able. You're not going to be able to go back to that school for a while, and so this is something that the state can come in. You know, we put rules and regulations and laws in place for a reason, but we need to be reasonable about these rules and regulations. This is one that we could help lift a strenuous burden off our school systems, and I'm glad we're moving that direction and have the governor's support to do that.
Representative Bell, changing topics now. The last time you and I talked, we were looking ahead at some of the campaigns in the House across the state, and you had recently been voted in by your peers there in the House as the majority leader, replacing Representative Hager. And you said you felt pretty confident about the team and the ability to get out and support members of the House who may be in some competitive races. Now that we're 2 weeks out, can you give us an update on how you're feeling about the effort that you guys are putting forth?
Well, I still feel pretty good about our effort, and I feel confident that we'll maintain the majority. I feel good about, you know, the supermajority. That's going to be a bit of a challenge. Anytime you have 75-plus Republicans out of 120 members, that's always a challenge to retain the number of seats that we have. But we do have some competitive districts there. But we're doing everything that we possibly can. We have members supporting members. We have members that have been out working there. They're knocking on doors. They're working polls. We're doing everything we possibly can to support every member in the House, and also our candidates on the ballot. And whether it's doing what we did yesterday, working with Representative Martin and Representative Murphy in Pitt County and in Wilson County, whether it's going to support Representative Collins in Rocky Mound. Last week I was in the western part of the state with Representative Kyle Hall, and then we're down with Representative Alan McNeil and Representative Pat Hurley, and in the southeastern part of the state would represent, you know, hopefully our new representative Brendan Jones will pull through that one. You know, we've divvied up the state, and we're rocking and rolling to support every member and every candidate we have on the ballot. And now with early voting started, it's up to the citizens of the state. You know, in my opinion, there are two paths that we can go on. We can go on the path where you have fiscal responsibility, you have responsible budgeting, you have reserves in place for Medicaid and unemployment insurance, you have a rainy day reserve to be able to handle disasters like we just experienced here in eastern North Carolina. You have the best tax climate in the southeast, one of the fastest growing economies in the country. That's one path. or you can go on the other path. The other path put us in $2.5 billion worth of debt. You had $600 million shortfall in Medicaid. You had excessive government spending. Teachers and state employees hadn't had raises in years. There's two different paths, and the people have a choice. And I'm hoping and I feel confident at the end of the day, on November the 8th, when all the ballots are cast, that we will be looking at Governor McCrory reelected and solid majorities in both chambers.
Our guest is Representative John Bell, and serving in the North Carolina House. Now, Representative Bell, in terms of, I want to go back to focus a little bit more on the area that you represent, because I asked Mayor Murphy yesterday, I said, if you could grab the microphone on day one in January when you guys reconvene, what would you say? And he would say that the Eastern North Carolina, some of these rural areas really need help with infrastructure. And as you know, this is an issue, Representative Bell, that gets kicked around, and it's just really, and I'm not being critical, but the reality is that when you have rural areas, they don't have the property tax base, say, of a Wake or Mecklenburg County, it's very hard for these folks locally to raise money for schools and school repairs or new schools or roads or sewage and all this kind of stuff. I know that the aftermath of Hurricane Matthew is really going to, you know, make that problem even more glaring, you know, that these folks need help. But certainly we don't want to go down, as you said, go down a path of raising taxes and doing all of that stuff. But how do we help Eastern North Carolina? Have you, you know, I know it's not an easy answer, but
No, it's not an easy answer, but it's not just Eastern North Carolina. It's also Western North Carolina and all of rural North Carolina. And one of the challenges that we face with, even though we're a very, very fast-growing state, is that our metropolitan areas are growing leaps and bounds faster than our rural areas. And you want those areas to grow and be successful, but we can't leave our rural areas so far behind that we can never catch up. A big issue that we tackled a few years ago was stopping the transfer from the Highway Trust Fund to actually build roads.
Uh-huh.
We're paving roads and building roads in Eastern North Carolina again. We're actually maintaining roads in Eastern North Carolina again. The same thing's happening in Western North Carolina. Of course, with the latest storm, with Hurricane Matthew, now we've got some challenges. We have roads that are completely washed out, which are main arteries that connect rural areas to urban areas. And actually, even you can go a step further, there are actually areas that can connect other rural areas to other rural areas. And so we're going to have to take a look at this. One of the things that I started doing is looking at what happened in Hurricane Floyd back in 1999 and looking at the package that was put together there and listen to our small business leaders, our community leaders, because we're going to need to do some type of grant program, some type of funding there that can help fix these issues that we have. Not just do we have roads that were lost, but you also had volunteer fire departments, EMS stations that were completely flooded and washed away. You know, how you mentioned it earlier with the tax base, how can a little community, Seven Springs, build a new volunteer fire department, EMS center, when their total community is wiped away and actually could end up being completely bought out by FEMA? You know, that's a whole area in the southeastern part of Wayne County that needs those services that right now does not have them. And so we're going to have to look at these issues. We also had water and sewer lines that were completely washed away because they ran on the side of right-of-ways of the road. So how can we work with our local sanitation districts and local our small cities and towns to be able to fix this? And so this is a major issue that we have facing us. And this is one of the issues I'm already starting to work on. How can we help, you know, our friends? Because our cities and counties are our friends, and we need to make sure that they're successful and not left behind.
Well, Representative Bell, I know that you have been extremely busy as a result of the hurricane and also with all of the help that you're giving to your colleagues there in the House. But I know the citizens of your district certainly appreciate your representation and all of the work that you are doing for them. One last thought here. I was reading an article this morning. In fact, I posted it out on social media where Target recently, and I'm trying to remember where this was, but there was a story about Target where a guy who claimed to be identifying as a female was actually leaning over a dressing room and videotaping an 18-year-old girl. And, you know, the left and those who are opponents of the common sense legislation of House Bill 2, you know, they say things like, oh, well, you know, there's nothing to worry about. And people that oppose, you know, the Charlotte ordinance, you're just trying to scare people. But here is a guy, and I want to read this to you. It was a 46-year-old guy, and he was caught, and he went to court, and this is what he said, quote, "I was taking advantage of Target's gender-inclusive policies to gain access to girls like the 18-year-old girl that I was filming." And asked why he was doing this, he said, "For the same reason men go online to look at pornography." Now, you know, that kind of is a glaring example, Representative Bell, that, you know, there really are legitimate safety concerns involved when allowing anybody to go into any area they want to go just because they happen to, you know, say they are identifying a certain way.
If Charlotte would have been successful in House Bill 2, would have never happened. This would have been a norm across the state of North Carolina.
Wow.
I'm very glad that my colleagues on both sides of the aisle stood up and tried to protect women and children from some acts like this, because you're going to have people that take advantage of it. This is just one instance of a number of instances that happen across the country where people have taken advantage of this law. This is one of the more interesting issues of the election is here it is. Everything that we've done great in the state with the Republican majority, we're out there talking to the citizens of the state, talking about what we've done to make their lives better. Our opposition, the only thing they can talk about is bathrooms.
Yeah.
It is common sense. I'm not that smart of a person, but I do know that boys go to the boys' restroom and girls go to the girls' restroom.
that makes sense to me.
And, you know, that's about as simple as it gets.
Yeah. Well, Representative Bell, one thing is pretty simple, and that is it's easy to tell that you're working hard for your constituents and for our state. And for that, we thank you for your time, as always, for being our guest on What Matters in North Carolina. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you very much, and look forward to talking with you in the future.
All right. Have a great day. Well, it's 2 weeks out until the big day, and no better guest to have when talking elections than Susan Myrick. She's the excellent elections policy analyst with the Civitas Institute. Susan, welcome back to What Matters in North Carolina.
Thank you, Mark.
Now, we've heard, Susan, the Trump campaign and many of his surrogates and supporters going around here, particularly in the last couple of weeks, talking about, quote, a rigged system,
right,
and all of that. And a lot of people are looking at that as maybe sour grapes, looking at that with a cynical eye. But you've been involved intimately with the process for so long, and you may or may not be able to speak broadly about national things, but here in North Carolina, I think there are reasons for people to be somewhat concerned.
Sure. Not just currently, but in the past especially. If you look at our system over the years, and definitely it was rigged. There was a one-party rule for 140 years or whatever the final count was, and they had written election law to benefit them throughout the years. I mean, you can look at the way the ballots were set up, where the Democrats were always the first candidate. In an election, you can look at how we used to have ballots that you were not required, but you had the option of voting a straight ticket, which is very convenient. But when it came to a presidential election years, the presidential race was not included on that straight party option.
Huh.
So why was that? Because what the legislators who were implementing and creating the laws saw was that North Carolinians would vote for Democrats statewide, but when it came to the president, they were more inclined to vote for a Republican presidential candidate, so they made sure that it wasn't part of a straight party ticket. So, I mean, that was just a couple of examples of definitely rigging of the system.
It's interesting. I bet you have a lot of little-known facts that most people are not aware of that they kind of make people raise their eyebrow about the integrity of the process.
And that is actually the reason why the Republicans, when they came into power in 2010, looked at the election law in North Carolina and decided it needed almost a complete rewrite. They actually, I would say, started to right some wrongs, and they didn't do it like most people would think they would. Democrats had always been, like I said, the first candidates on the ballot in a race. Instead of saying, no, we're going to put Republicans up there all the time, being the first, they didn't do that. They said in partisan races, it would be the sitting governor's party that would be top of the ticket. What's going to happen when the Democrats come back in power? Only they know, I guess, and when that happens. But
bite your tongue.
I'm just saying, when the Republicans came in, I believe they did some good things and tried to start looking at things fair, to be fair to everyone.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, too, because the people of North Carolina, Susan, I think they appreciate those efforts. The support, for example, for voter ID was broad. It was overwhelming. It was bipartisan. It was not limited to racial divides. And yet a few
very loud.
Yeah, very loud folks on the left trying to, somehow get themselves back in power. Oppose that,
and they demonized the party and the people, and not just the party, the people who wanted those reforms to help with integrity, voter integrity.
So yeah, and so even though the broad base of the citizenry supported common sense things, particularly like voter ID, it's a shame that our election integrity has to have even a hint of question just because a few people on the left are trying to, regain power or whatever it is they're trying to do.
Regain power or create chaos, or at least the appearance of chaos in elections, is what I always think that they're headed toward.
We're talking with Susan Myrick. She is the elections policy analyst with the Civitas Institute. Here's a troubling little headline on the News and Observer. Early voting site left unlocked in Granville County. Stuff like that and there's human error. I understand that. But,
error.
That just doesn't make you feel good.
No, and more probably questionable than that. I'm sure that will never happen again in Granville County. When things like that happen, unfortunately, sometimes it takes those things for people to step up and do double checks. But more troubling is what we've seen at the State Board of Elections in the last month.
Yeah.
Employees perhaps working in a partisan nature, encouraging voter fraud, changing the laws without...
I wouldn't say perhaps. In my opinion, it was pretty blatant.
Well, it appears to be that way. They've actually fired that one employee. Another employee seems to, even though the state board would like to everybody to know it's not just her that decided to change the way... the law is carried out for voter registration purposes in the boards of elections, but it really does call into question the powers that be with the State Board of Elections and how they're administering the election. And some people would say that's rigging the system.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think that's too far of a stretch to say that. Now, maybe you can just calm my fears, mm-hmm. Susan, but, I like to early vote because particularly in a presidential election, you're going to stand in line on election day very likely, but now you're going to stand in line for early voting too.
Right. Isn't that funny? I was thinking about that this morning. And anymore, election day is pretty pretty easy going if you go in and vote on election day. But the left screams about long lines, yeah. don't they? Except when it's okay for them. And, yeah. and it's okay right now because it's doing something they want to do. They want to vote early. So the longer the lines, the better as far as they're concerned, and they're not crying about it. I'm one that likes to vote on election day, but ever since they decided that if you vote early and you die, your vote will count. I encourage everybody to go vote as early as they can because nobody knows what tomorrow brings. And before, we believed that if you voted early and died, your vote wouldn't count, but it does. So why tempt fate? Vote fast.
Well, I think there's stories in Chicago that it doesn't matter when you die, you still get to vote.
True. In Washington County, North Carolina, is the very same way.
But my point that I was going to make was I've always felt a little uneasy voting early. I maybe I'm cynical by nature, but, you know, you stick that ballot in the counter and you wonder, is it really going to be counted?
Yes.
You think
I know it is. I mean, I worked at the Wake County Board of Elections for seven, almost 8 years, and absolutely, it's just like voting on Election Day. They just don't push the button and officially tally those votes until 7:30 on election night.
So there's no risk of somebody getting in there and pulling out the ballots that were voted for a particular party or that sort of thing?
That would be a lot of work. Mm-hmm. It would be a lot of work. One person, it would be a tough thing to do. The votes are already tabulated, and when all the work is done after Election Day, the individual boards of elections start auditing, and they're checking about four or five different totals to make sure that what they have is exactly right. They're looking at the numbers on the tabulators. They're looking at the numbers on the little sheets of paper that you sign. They're called authorizations to vote. They're looking at the printed tapes coming out of, they're looking at everything and counting. And then they end up actually having to, I think, three precincts in every county are chosen by an outside source for them to hand count.
Wow.
So, you know, of course there can always be something that happens.
Sure.
But it's a pretty good system.
So you just said something that maybe might help me feel better. You said when you stick your ballot into that machine and it, and you know, the voting total changes, they're tabulated at that point?
They are actually tabulated. When I say they're tabulated, the vote is not tabulated. It's a computer. It's put in a place. And so all they have to do is push a button and the actual numbers will come out.
So that's not something that later on people are pulling those paper ballots out of the machine and they're entering.
No.
Just made me feel a lot better.
Oh, yeah. It's a computer. If we depended on that, our election. We'd still be counting, yeah. And it would never be right if you depend on people to do it. And I know people don't like what they're called DREs, the direct record equipment. It's just the very same thing as the tabulator with the ballot. It just doesn't have a ballot. That's the only drawback to me with the direct record. We will hear about it in every election where somebody says they push a name and another name comes up.
Yeah.
And that's just a calibration problem there. And sometimes in movement it happens. And that's another thing that the workers will figure out. They need to calibrate every time they move the machine. But in the end, they're almost the same, very, very same machines, and I trust both of them.
Well, that's good to know. You've actually made me feel a little bit better about voting early. Now, part of my concern, however, was we heard that in the last presidential election, a lot of the military absentee ballots did not get counted. And my son, who goes to school in Virginia, actually just went through the absentee ballot process. He requested a ballot, and it came in the mail. And he was home this weekend, and he filled it out and mailed it back because he won't be here on Election Day. But what kind of comfort can you give that absentee ballots will be counted?
Absentee ballots are always counted. Unfortunately, the military always runs into problems, and I have no idea why. It really makes one stop and wonder, because we seem to be able to take care of every little complaining faction of the inconvenienced masses. But for some reason, we can't step up and take care of the military and make sure that their votes are counted even first.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what to tell you there. I know there's people that work on it and constantly to try to help them, but there's always problems.
Well, I want to quickly, I told you about this yesterday. I thought this was kind of bizarre. And this has nothing to do with voting, but I'd never seen this process, but he stuck his ballot in an envelope and signs the outside of it. And then there have to be two witnesses to sign on the outside and put their address, attesting that, you know, everything was done as it should be. And Susan, you mail this with signatures and addresses on the outside of an envelope. I thought, well, here we are in a day and age where identity theft is rampant. Somebody who wanted to do something, you know, that wasn't very nice could just snap a picture of absentee ballot envelopes. And well, that they're halfway, you know, on the way to identity theft. It seems like you would put that
in
something that was, you know, concealed.
I think it's a good suggestion. I think they've done it like this forever, and they probably haven't thought about changing it.
Yeah. Anyway, got that off my chest. Yes. So, are you concerned? We've had some of the recent headlines, you know, George Soros voting machines changing votes. Is this something that gives you pause for concern, whether or not it's George Soros? But
well, not in North Carolina. If a county does everything they're supposed to do, I think you can rely on our machines. They test them. I advise everybody to go down to call the county boards, and you can't do it this election. It's long past that time. But you can actually go watch them. They will describe what they're doing and how they test the machines, they code the machines, and you can watch them put ballots through to make sure they count correctly. So, I mean, this is a big deal to do in 100 counties with thousands and thousands and thousands of machines, but they do it every election.
So there are things, though, that give you pause for concern in terms of election integrity.
Absolutely.
And all of that.
Absolutely.
What is your biggest area of in that regard?
Well, the simplest thing, of course, is voter ID, as you said before. I always said North Carolina, at least my experience with elections, had the best security for ballots I've ever seen. From the time that they were printed and delivered to the Board of Elections, they're put under lock and key. They're counted first. They're put under lock and key, and when they disseminate them to the officials to go out to the precincts and to the one-stop sites, they're counted again, and they're counted, and they're counted. So you know that you have a certain number of ballots. Nobody's touched them. Nobody is allowed to go into this room where there's thousands and hundreds of thousands of ballots. But the minute that first person walks up and says, my name is and I live at, you have no clue who you're getting up to. And so all of the security that has been in place, it's been under lock and key, under camera surveillance, it's thrown out the window when you give it to somebody who just recites a name and address.
That's really
another biggie, and just as big as voter ID is early voting in combination with same day registration.
Yeah.
It's a travesty, and it lends itself to voter fraud, and you can see that it actually happens if you look down at Robeson County, who's had to throw out at least two elections because of voter fraud using same-day registration.
Hmm. Can I just say this, and this is not intended in any way to have overtones of race, but whether you're talking about African-Americans or others, you know, white people or Hispanic or whatever, I don't think the average folks, Susan, are sitting around thinking, you know what, I'm going to go register and vote at the same time. I think most people, just like most people have ID, have gone through the process well enough in advance to make sure that they're good to go. Obviously, there are exceptions to that. People who may have been sick, may have forgotten, may have been traveling, etc. But to me, and again, I'm cynical, but to me, being able to register and vote at the same time just smacks of the ability to commit voter fraud. And I don't know why anyone would assert that, even if they're saying, well, you know, you're disenfranchising African Americans. I think that's wrong. I think it's just setting up the environment.
The only reason they use that as a defense is to knock you off your feet, call you a racist, and stop the discussion. That's the only reason they're saying that. It's funny that you say most people would not think about doing that, and you would hope that's true. Of course, this is the kind of voter fraud that is hard to see. You know, it happens. The vote's over. The election's won or lost, and by the time anybody has a hint of voter fraud, it's too hard to prove.
Can't undo election results typically.
No, not if it's certified. It's over. But look, and you can see that actually out in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Remember the Senate race that the Saturday Night Live
Franken
guy, Al Franken won. They after he had been elected, there was proof there was enough voter fraud that went his way. He should not have been a senator.
Yeah, I remember that.
He should not have been a senator, but it's too late. And but then you look at the videos that James O'Keefe has put out in the last week.
Oh, my goodness.
You see that it's not, it is a concerted effort.
Yeah.
And it's not racial. It is a concerted effort by the powerful consultants and enforcers of the left. They know how to move it.
Yeah.
And if it takes violence or voter fraud, they don't care. Bussing people around from county to county, they don't base it on race. It depends on what county it's in. Yes, Donald Trump is right. There's no doubt about it. The system's rigged one way or the other, and the fight to unrig that system, I think that's the fight we've got to fight.
Well, let me see if I understand this. So I could go make up a date this Saturday to where I live and early vote. Then if I wanted to, I could just roam around the county and not having to show ID, I could just make up stuff on a voter registration application and vote the same day.
Well, not so much. You could actually, and you could have, you know, you could make copies of utility bills, and you would have no problem at all. But the easiest way to do it is to get the list of at least at any given time over 500,000 voters who are considered inactive.
Right.
Get that list. Get all the mail names and in the general age range that you have, and start voting. Because you can look at them. Well, James O'Keefe has done that too, hasn't he?
Yeah, he sure has.
One of the people that works for him went in and asked for Eric Holder's ballot, and they gave it to him. Well, they wanted to give it to him. He had to go get his ID, but it's easy. And voter impersonation, the left loves to say there's no prosecuted cases of voter impersonation, but you don't expect them to be. The very nature of that fraud is not being found out.
Yeah, well, it's not being blasted out publicly.
That's exactly right.
And, you know, I think it was you that told me a great analogy as we wind up here that, you know, if you're the only one on I-40 heading to the beach at 6 o'clock in the morning and you're going 85 miles an hour, nobody might see you speeding, but
you're still speeding.
You're breaking the law.
That's
and
right.
So just because we're not, you know, seeing broadcast or highlighted, you know, under white spotlights on election day, people committing voter fraud, that certainly doesn't mean that it's not happening. And all we can hope, I guess, is that things go the way they should.
Well, you can hope. And here's another rigging of the system. You've probably heard in the last couple of days, and you cannot lay the media out because they play such a major role in it that, you know, Hillary Clinton has an edge in North Carolina.
Oh, I want to ask you about this. Let me ask you this for our listeners, because I was confused, and they don't tabulate these early votes yet.
Oh, no. They're looking at who is voting as far as party goes.
So I saw a big headline, Hillary wraps up Florida.
Yeah.
It's 2 weeks ahead of time.
Yeah. Yeah.
They haven't counted those votes.
They haven't counted the votes. They're looking at party. And if you look at North Carolina and party registration, it is very interesting. It's too early to talk about yet, but certainly Hillary Clinton is not winning North Carolina.
So the media then, they part of the quote rigged system, they're out there blasting that, say, for example, Hillary is just steamrolling. So that'll make somebody like say, well, golly, maybe I don't even need to go bother to vote. It's not going to matter.
In the day, many years ago, the media used to do exit polling and would announce the winner before the polls closed. And they have stopped doing that because they did affect election results.
Sure. Yeah.
And so, but they're doing the very same thing with this, and except they don't know even more than they didn't know with election, exit polling. This is definitely an interesting year. More unaffiliated voters are voting. It's going to be very interesting. And maybe we can get together and next week and actually talk about who turned out and what it looks like. Because when it comes down to the end of it, we might be able to call it, but not today.
All right. Well, we will definitely have you back on and talk about some of the things that you are working on to kind of give us an analysis of trends so far by party. Susan Myrick, Elections Policy Analyst with the Civitas Institute. You always do excellent work, and you're always an excellent guest, and we thank you very much.
Thank you.
Joining us now on What Matters in North Carolina is Susan Swift. You will find her work at politichicks.com. She's a writer and commentator and pretty smart when it comes to cutting through all of the noise and nonsense that we've been seeing here, particularly in the campaign as far as questionable antics regarding the election. And so, Susan Swift, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on, Mark.
Well, let's just get right to the question I think that a lot of people are asking. Can we trust the process in this election? We've heard Donald Trump and those talking about a rigged system. When you hear that, what do you think?
Well, it makes me nervous. I know that there's a report out right now by the Washington Examiner that says just 4 in 10 people are confident that their vote it will be counted accurately. And what's really interesting is it's split along Republican and Democrat lines in two interesting ways. Republicans, like 66% of Republicans, believe that people casting votes will not be eligible to vote. So most of the 66 of Republicans are believing that voter fraud is going to be happening. And on the other side, 62% of those Democrats polled believe that eligible voters who should be voting will be denied the right to vote. So on both sides, everybody's really upset, and they don't think that our votes are going to be counted accurately.
That's a lot. I mean, if you think about it, I would think that that's cause for a great deal of concern.
Yeah. If we don't have a valid election process, we're living in a banana republic. I mean, we might as well just be in, you know, Venezuela, where they just declare somebody is, you know, the official benevolent dictator. And a lot of us feel like we're already living in that. And it's going to come down to you got to watch your vote and make sure that your vote is accurately reported. There's another story that InfoWars is reporting. This is anecdotal information only. These are voters in Texas, Republican voters in Texas, who have reported when they have gone to the polls and they've done early voting, that they watched on the machines there that they voted the straight Republican ticket, and then when it was time to confirm their vote before they pushed the button to confirm, they saw that their votes had been switched to the Democrat, to Hillary Clinton. So there's anecdotal information out there, and people on Reddit and social media sending reports around saying, you know, the machines in Texas are rigged. So that story's out there. It's hard to tell how much, you know, validity, because it's, you know, anecdotal and people can say whatever they want, but it's got everybody panicked, especially since the polls are so tight.
Absolutely. Our guest is Susan Swift. She's excellent. You'll find her work at politichicks.com. And your latest article talks about, in case you need a reminder of who's in bed with Russia, Hillary's false flag, Russia is rigging the election, but for whom? And You very accurately write that in the last debate, she kind of basically said yes. that, you know, Putin and them are in bed with Trump, but that not necessarily is that the case.
Yeah, this is at the third debate for people who, I mean, I know in the third debate was a little flat, and some people may have tuned out of it. But what she said is that she said, this is a quote, Russians have hacked American websites, American accounts of private people, institutions. Then they have given that information to WikiLeaks for the purpose of putting it on the Internet. Now, she's blaming the Russians for all of these massive emails from the Podesta leaks WikiLeaks is putting out there. She doesn't say any of the emails are false. You notice that?
Right.
She doesn't dispute the accuracy of all these emails, and these are damaging emails that WikiLeaks is simply reporting. Yes, WikiLeaks obtained them in some sort of scurrilous manner, but nevertheless, the content is true. And what Hillary tried to do is plant in Americans' minds that there's some sort of nefarious plot from Putin, who is now feeding WikiLeaks. And then she pivoted and said she thinks that the most important question of the evening would be to finally ask Donald Trump, will he admit and condemn that the Russians are doing this? She's actually planted the notion, and the media is helping with this, that somehow Russia and Donald Trump are somehow in cahoots to rig the election against poor Hillary. And in fact, actually, the opposite is true. What we, if you remember back in 2012, this was when Obama was running for his second term, he had a hot mic issue of his own. He was sitting down with, Medvedev, that was the Russian president at the time, and they were at a nuclear security summit, I think it was South Korea. And so the two of them were sitting and huddling together. They didn't realize that their mics were still on. The press was all around taking pictures. But that's when Obama says, you know, after the election, I can be more flexible. And Medvedev responded that, you know, he understood and that he would relay that information to the incoming president, Putin. So that's back in 2012. This is Obama telegraphing to the new president of Russia, Putin, hey, don't worry. I'm going to get in the second term. I'm going to be a lot more flexible about this, you know, nuclear arms defense. Don't worry, I got your back. That's what he said in 2012. And then following up on that, this was then later when Hillary Clinton was acting Secretary of State, she approved a deal which allowed Russia to control 20% of the U.S. uranium production.
That, wow.
This has been well documented in Peter Schweitzer's book, Clinton Cash. What had to happen was there was a Canadian firm that was trying to sell it to Russia all of the control of, you know, 20% of uranium production. That sale had to be approved by the State Department to go through. And Hillary Clinton was there at the right time, and she profited from it. I mean, she got donations to her campaign, her Clinton foundation. So if anyone is in bed with the Russians rigging the election, it certainly isn't Donald Trump.
Yeah. So, Susan, as we come to a close here, one thing I want to ask. So let me ask you this. One of the things that I've noticed that the media are doing now is here in North Carolina and Florida and other places where early voting is going on, even though the votes haven't been tabulated yet, the media is blasting these sensational headlines. I saw yesterday Hillary trouncing Trump in Florida, mm-hmm. and, you know, Hillary pounding Trump in North Carolina. And, you know, okay, so maybe there have been more Democrats than Republicans vote, but I think that's highly irresponsible and definitely an intentional attempt by the media to boost Hillary by making people think, well, heck, I may as well not vote if she's already won.
Yeah, you think? That's a brilliant point. The media is already spinning the campaign as though it's all a done deal, it's all over. And, you know, all of you pesky Republicans and conservatives and independents and anyone else who might want to vote for Trump, just stay home because we've already got this in the bag. They are desperate to suppress voter turnout because that's the only way Republicans can win, especially given we have proof now in video. This is Project Veritas. This is James O'Keefe. He exposed the Acorn scandal years ago. Now he has got another series of undercover videos showing the collusion and the connection between the DNC, that's the Democrat National Committee, Democrat Partners, which is a think tank activist group, and Americans United for Change, which is another boots-on-the-ground Democrat-funded super PAC. And together, they have coordinated. This is all in video at Project Veritas. You can look it up on YouTube. And they have together, by telephone and speaking in person and collaborating and planning and plotting, to execute Hillary Clinton's plan to campaign against Donald Trump. Now, you can't do that. That is a violation of federal campaign laws. There is not supposed to be any communication between a campaign, any campaign, I don't care if it's Republican or Democrat. You can't have the Trump campaign communicating with a super PAC saying, hey, I want you to run these kind of ads. Neither can Hillary do the same thing, and she has. That's what Project Veritas videos are coming out and showing. So you're seeing this massive Democrat machine. It's the media, it's the DNC, it's Hillary's campaign, it's Americans United for Change and Democracy Partners. They're all teaming, and who knows who else? There are probably other boots on the ground. They are teaming together to sway the election against federal law. And the media is part of this. That's why they're reporting the poll numbers. That's why ABC News is saying, well, 12% Clinton, she's got it up in the bag. Well, that's really interesting, but we've got polls all over the map. We've got the CNN poll today has Clinton up by 5. The Investors Business Daily has Trump up by 2. Rasmussen has them tied, dead even. And the LA Times poll has Trump up by 1. So we've got polls all over the place, and Real Clear Politics is a good place to go and see them all laid out. But it's really too hard. You can't say that there is a clear victor at all. But the media wants that. They're desperate. They have to drag Hillary across the finish line, just like the Secret Service has to drag her into the Scooby van after she collapsed. Her campaign may indeed be collapsing. She's hibernating. Where is she? She's resting after the debate. Remember, she said no more naps.
Right.
I mean, she even Drudge Report has a picture of her, a very concerning picture of Mrs. Clinton. She's got some sort of a gash or a bump or a cut or maybe an implant or something on her right cheek, as though she maybe fell again. Of course, maybe in private. We don't have video of it. Did she fall again because perhaps she's suffering from some sort of condition that she will not disclose? This woman is collapsing. Her campaign is collapsing, and the media is desperately carrying her, just like the Secret Service did, dragging her across the finish line because they're desperate that the system, the rigged system of our political party, and this is both parties, this is the establishment. We've got a populist election coming up. So many people are furious and outraged at the direction of this country. We all feel like our votes are being stolen. Our votes are being sent to Mexico, basically, that, you know, we're importing different voters and our votes don't matter. People are absolutely furious, and they're going to be coming out and voting. And the only thing that the media can do to save the day for Hillary is to make sure that you know, people just don't bother to vote, that they convince us with their media magic. That somehow our votes really don't matter anyway. That's what we're seeing.
Well, certainly not in my mind, but maybe something good will happen out of all of this, Susan, and we'll actually see the American people wake up. Certainly listening to you is one way for them to learn and become educated. We'll direct our listeners to politichicks.com. And as always, you're awesome, and thank you so much for being our guest on What Matters in North Carolina.
Thank you. They can also find me on my website, which is susanswift.net.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Well, thanks to our guests today, Representative John Bell, Susan Myrick of the Civitas Institute, and, of course, Susan Swift. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back tomorrow with another great edition of What Matters in North Carolina.